The Nazi Roots of the Brussels EU. Chapter 2. Walter Hallstein. The Master Plan of the Nazi Cartel Coalition. Blueprint for the Brussels EU. Hallstein's 1939 Conquest Speech. Continued. All internal problems, all internal tasks, are overshadowed by the great impact of the link-up of other nations to the Nazi Reich. They are overwhelmed by the magnificent impulses that the legal policy work obtains from the homecoming of Austria and Sudetenland. The creation of the Greater German Reich. A political fact, the Führer Act of epochal dimension, one of those acts that change the landscape of history and fulfill an old longing of the people, an economic event of sheer unimaginable consequences, an event of exceptional significance from the perspective of the history of the law. The task is no longer just to renovate a dilapidated old house, but to construct a new building for an enlarged family on an extended territory. The question will be, is it really necessary to erect just one building? This brings us right to the first problem of legal policy caused by the territorial annexations. Why should one single legal system form the basis of a greater Germany? There is no doubt today about the necessity for a united legal system. The failure to put this law into action is one of the unfinished tasks and failures of the Second German Reich. The affirmation arises not only from material convenience. This Greater Germany is increasingly becoming one single economic entity. And by Greater Germany, he meant the European continent. Therefore, it is obviously not acceptable that the legal system that represents the blood circulation of this body is being strangulated by the diversity of legal systems in its different parts. A people are not only formed by common physical conditions, i.e. inherited and external factors, neither are they formed by the common fate of history alone. A people are primarily shaped by common convictions and values. Thus, the leadership of a people state, in particular National Socialism, cannot do without the tools of law in order to secure this common ground. Proposal of a community, for there are few things the authoritative nature of which are so deeply based in the human heart as the belief of law and truth. Since we now answered the question of if a uniform legal system is needed, we can now turn the question of what such a system must look like, which is even more difficult. The link-up or annexation of Austria is initially a process of state law. This process integrates the territory and the people of the newly linked annexed state, creating a new nationality for the people. Moreover, this process subjugates the people and the territories to the sovereignty of the mother state with its defined legislative and executive constitutional powers. In other legal areas, the link-up leaves the existing legal order. It leaves that legal order intact. In all the unified European territories, the old legal system continues, except, of course, where this contradicts the constitution of the unified European state. Thus, for the Greater German Reich, a common legal system is not a fact that automatically results from the creation of this future Reich, but it is a task. A naive observer of this situation could think that nothing is easier to accomplish than this task. Such a person could think that one needs only one instruction, namely that all laws of the old Reich would immediately be applicable to Austria, Ostmark, and the Sudetenland, but the task at hand is not that simple. It is impossible to impose over such a territory at once the entire sum of our written laws. Such a strategy would already fail due to the sheer limitations of the mental capacity of those people who are to apply these laws. Such an attempt would also fail due to the complexity of the structure of a modern social order. One cannot simply change a legal system like a dress that has become unfashionable, because every fundamental change also touches, so to speak, the personality of a people. I'm now coming to the concrete questions of the adjustment of law. One has to distinguish between certain norms, the introduction of which cannot be delayed, and they represent a certain emergency program within the legal unification process. On the other hand, there are those laws that have to be crafted first, since in the legal field there are no inventions but only discoveries. These laws have to be crafted under the participation of the protectors of the law in the Eastern Territories, who can make some contributions towards the purification of our legal system and towards making it a true law of the German people. The legal emergency program, the immediate goals, are in fact the introduction of the laws already in use of the Old Reich. The legal process to introduce these laws is the directive. The competence to issue these directives lies with the officials of the Reich, together with the Ministry of the Interior. Among the subjects of this rapid alignment of the law can differentiate between two groups. The first group comprises the directives concerning the constitutional law, which constitute the National Socialist State and define its shape and reality. These directives are already introduced in Austria a few days after the unification law. Amongst them are the state constitutional laws against setting up of new political parties, state constitutional laws to secure the unity between the state and the party, state constitutional laws for the new construction of the Reich, state constitutional laws about governors of the Reich. Certain legal complexities connected with these constitutional laws, including the Reich citizen law, the Reich flag law, directives about the national markings, the national seal, and the national symbols. The second group of immediate laws, which are expanded daily, comprises the directives concerning the build-up of state organisations, material rights of or proceedings, about which the National Socialist lawmaker has already cast his verdict, either by maintaining existing legal conditions or by creating new ones. These directives are causa ludicata, or past acts, i.e. they have entered from the state of law policy into the state of existing order. These laws require no further deliberations. The most important acts in this category that are immediately introduced were the law of the protection of the German blood and the German honour, the setting up of the administrative organisations of the Reich, the financial administration as one of the first measures, the judicial administration, the railway and postal service administration, the air traffic administration, the officers of the propaganda ministry, the military laws or Wehrmacht, and the laws about the Reich work service and the law about air defence. From the administrative laws, the Reich community administrative law, the law of reunion, part of the civil servant law, and part of the law relating to the public service salary regulations. Important taxes. From the laws regulating professional organisations, the law regulating the Chamber of Culture, and the veterinary law. From the farming law, the farm estate inheritance law, the food supply law, the regulations for marketing of agricultural products. From the social law, the Reich insurance regulations and the social welfare regulations. From the employment laws, step by step the law regulating national work service. Furthermore, the rules about the production sector of the economy, about cartel laws, about corporate advertisement, about the formation of prices, in particular about government regulations to fix prices. From the civil law, the law of preventing the abuse of executive powers, from the criminal law, in particular the law about treason and high treason, from the private law, the new bill shareholder law, the law relating to bills of exchange, and the railroad traffic laws and others. The introduction of these laws of great urgency cannot simply be accomplished by naked sentence that orders these laws into force in the new territories. By the way, these laws have not been introduced in the Sudetenland at the same speed because of the insufficient time, but also because we cannot take over an entire state with a defined legal system. The structure of the administrative organization of Austria and Sudetenland, which is currently being shaped, will serve as a model for the future administration of the entire Reich. This has been outlined by Reich Interior Minister Frick a few days ago during a speech at the Academy of Administration in Hamburg, Germany. At the lower level of this administrative structure in conquered countries, there will be the entities of the cities and the counties. The counties are a mixture of administrative districts of the state and self-administered bodies. They will be led by an administrative head. At the middle level of this administrative structure, there will be the entities of regions of the Reich, also a mixture of administrative districts of the state and self-administered bodies. They will be led by governors of the Reich. These few examples may give you an impression how much still needs to be done to execute after the political Germanization and also the legal Germanization of the new territories. An overwhelming abundance of great opportunities lies in front of the German protector of the law. He will seize it with a deep thrust in the future of our people, and with the consciousness that is an honour for him to share a modest part of the burden of the construction work towards the completion of the grand historical task of Germany we have all been made a part of. So that was some of Walter Hallstein's speech from 1939. That's pre-war, and he was already talking about a greater Germany and the rules that were going to run Europe, even before World War II had started. Let's go back and just take a look at some of the other people that were involved, because it wasn't just Walter Hallstein. In 1956, that was the year when the Intergovernmental Conference prepared the Treaties of Rome was launched. The same year, Fritz Thiermaier, the former Bayer IG Farben director, who'd been sentenced in Nuremberg to 9 years in prison for the enslavement of European citizens and the robbery of the European companies, was appointed chairman of Bayer. Again. The motives for the massive support of the Brussels EU by Bayer and the other IG Farben companies were obvious. As the world's largest patent-holding group in the field of chemicals and pharmaceuticals, they would essentially control Europe through their new Politburo, the Brussels EU. 17 years after Hallstein's conquest speech on behalf of the cartel, and 8 years after his cartel boss, Thiermaier, had been sent to prison for his war crimes, the Hallstein-Thiermaier team was united again behind the cartel's next attempt on the conquest of Europe. And also, the Treaties of Rome in 1957. On March 25, 1957, Hallstein completed the first stage of the cartel's assignment. The former crusader of the military conquest of Europe by the Nazi cartel coalition was one of only 12 signatories of the Treaties of Rome, which created the European Economic Community and Euratom. By signing these treaties, Hallstein, together with German Chancellor Adenauer, had created the launching pad for the cartel's next attempt at the conquest of Europe, by political pressure, economic bribery, and by Euratom. From the inception, the cartel's plan was to create the political and ultimately military base for its 21st century control of the world. But where would this cartel base itself? Where would its Politburo be? After crafting the Treaties of Rome, the next cartel assignment for Hallstein was to implement these treaties from the position of chief of the new central cartel office. On December 30, 1957, from the vacation resort Alfbacht in the Tyrolean Alps, Hallstein wrote a 3-page dossier to German Chancellor Adenauer. The letter, that should become known as the Brussels Final Solution, describes in detail the cartel's horse trading plans to secure the highest office in the new Europe for Hallstein himself, the role as first president of the EU Commission as chief of the cartel's Politburo. Highlights of this Brussels final solution letter are: we have to insist on Brussels as the final solution of the location question. Note Holstein's analogy to the Nazi propaganda of final solution to the Jewish question. The Italians have to be compensated for not having the seat in Rome. How? Well, we have to see. The thought of having the seat in Paris emerged, but this was dropped after our fierce intervention. And by our, Holstein meant himself. The tasks at hand, as head of the EU Commission, are tailor-made for a German. After 7 years of waiting, a German head is overdue. Only 8 days after his convincing self-promotion, Holstein's horse trading paid out. On January 7, 1958, he was appointed chief of the first EU Commission in the close circle of six foreign ministers. On that day, Holstein had successfully completed the second assignment of the cartel to coordinate its next attempt at the conquest of Europe from the position of chief of this newly formed Politburo. Brussels' Atonium, the claim of global control. The Lisbon Enabling Act calls for the build-up of a European army, including nuclear weapons, under the control of the cartel's Politburo, the EU Commission. With this 2009 Act, the Atonium symbol has visibly obtained a new meaning. The claim to global control by the Brussels EU, with its current plans to build new EU Commission buildings in view of the Atomium, the cartel leaves no doubt about its intentions. Fittingly to the advent of this new political construct, the Brussels EU, the 1958 World Fair took place in that city. The symbol of this World Fair, and the hallmark of Brussels ever since, being the Atomium building. The construction of this giant magnification of an atom was intended to symbolise the pride of mankind of having tamed nuclear energy for peaceful purposes and as a claim to world power. On January 1, 1959, the EU Commission officially established a common market for nuclear materials through Euratom. Thus, only 1 year after the Nazi cartel crusader Holstein was appointed chief of the cartel's Politburo, and 14 years after 1945, he had accomplished his third assignment, access of the German cartel interests to nuclear arms technology. Tradition of symbols. As a reward for completing the cartel's assignments during his first five-year term as Politburo chief, the cartel stakeholders commissioned the new King of Europe an appropriate castle and a royal staff of several thousand servile bureaucrats. Construction of the Baillemont building, which even today remain the headquarters of the EU Commission, began in 1963 and marked the beginning of Holstein's second five-year term as its chief. When looking at the blueprints of his future castle, Holstein must have been overcome with joy. The shape of the EU Commission's headquarters strikingly resembled the emblem of the badge he wore with pride for many years, only two decades previously. A tradition of promoting cartel dictatorships. From 1933 to 1945, on behalf of the Nazi cartel coalition. In 1939, Holstein publicly advocated the build-up of the Nazi cartel dictatorship across Europe, including the ban on other political parties and other characteristics of a totalitarian regime. Less than two decades later, this crusader for a corporate European dictatorship became the chief architect of the Brussels EU. In 1957, the same man was appointed by the cartel as the first president of its new Politburo, the EU Commission. To deceive the public, the military stakeholders of the cartel had been exchanged after 1945, but the oil and drug cartel positioned its key political and legal technocrats in pole positions for its next attempt at the conquest of Europe. Architect of the 21st century cartel dictatorship. 1939 Conquest Speech, 1957 Rome Treaties. Corporate dictatorship today. How could the political leaders of 27 European nations sign the Lisbon Enabling Act and approve a political platform of which the key architect had been, on public record, an outspoken advocate of political and corporate dictatorship? How can millions of intelligent people from across the European continent, a continent that claims to be the cradle of democracy, give away control over the destiny of their continent to a cast of politicians who are unable or unwilling to protect the century-old achievements of democracy for which so many people had sacrificed their lives? In 1957, the Aryan racist Walter Hallstein, a staunch crusader for the military subjugation of Europe under dictatorial rule of the Nazi cartel coalition, was allowed to become the key architect and first president of Europe. The people of Europe then were prevented from learning who this key architect for the Brussels EU was. After the publication of this book, no politician who signed the Lisbon Enabling Act, no political party sitting in the so-called European Parliament, a fig leaf for the corporate dictatorship of the Brussels EU, no one across Europe can say any longer, "We did not know." There can be only one conclusion. European politicians and political parties that continue to support the dictatorial construct of the Brussels EU, despite this devastating historical evidence, have to be voted out of office by millions of people and replaced by representatives who are determined to protect democracy. The total control of societies in all European nations. Already, prior to the passing of the Lisbon Enabling Act, the Brussels EU determined about 80% of all legal acts within the member countries of the Brussels EU. The monopoly for the initiation of this law rests with the cartel's Politburo, the EU Commission, not the EU Parliament. This is a result of the so-called Treaties of Rome, crafted half a century ago by the Hallstein team on behalf of the cartel. After the Lisbon Enabling Act, this percentage will reach close to 100%, i.e. the total control of the European nations, societies and the people by the cartel. Most of these laws, listed by Hallstein in his 1939 conquest speech, will be implemented across Europe by the Brussels EU. Hallstein's 1939 conquest speech is not only a unique historic document, but also extremely timely. It provides the reader and listener to this book, in fact every person in Europe today, a precise look into the future of this continent under the rule of the Brussels EU. The Nazi IG Farben four-year plan office and the cartel's blueprint for the EU Commission. The IG Farben cartel headquarters in Frankfurt, Germany, and IG Farben's NW7 economic planning office in Berlin. Karl Crouch was sentenced to 6 years in prison for enslavement, torture, murder, and other war crimes. Hermann Göring preempted the death sentence in Nuremberg by suicide. But they were both involved with the Nazi IG Farben cartel four-year plan office, also known as Crouch Office, at the Nuremberg Tribunal. It prepared the Nazis technologically and logistically for World War II. Coordinated the plundering and conquering of Europe. Was run by its plenipotentiary IG Farben director Karl Crouch, who commanded thousands of technocrats, was the economic government of conquered Europe, and became the cartel's and Hallstein's blueprint and model for the European Commission. The four-year plan office, the cartel's economic government for the conquest of Europe, published a monthly journal entitled The Four-Year Plan, Journal of National Socialist Economic Policy. The first four-year plan was launched in 1936 and had the goal to prepare Germany for World War II under the technological and economic guidance of the IG Farben cartel. Many of these four-year plan volumes have been preserved. The extensive advertising sections of this publication by the Nazi cartel's economic government reads like a who's who of corporate Germany. These journals will tell clearer than most history books on whose behalf World War II was launched. 65 years after the last volume of the Nazi Cartel Coalition's Economic Government Gazette, the four-year plan, was published, the cartel is preparing the resurrection of the very same totalitarian construct. Through the cartel's political stakeholders today, the heads of its political export nations, these interest groups are proposing a dictatorial economic government under the control of the Brussels EU. Mankind must not wait for another catastrophe and the next Nuremberg tribunal to stop these plans. It's become reality today. With the patenting of our food, the cartel is not only seeking to create a multi-trillion dollar global market, there's also a highly political component. The ultimate dependency of millions of people upon GMO foods will place entire populations at the mercy of these patent-holding companies. It's no coincidence that BASF, a member of the criminal IG Farben cartel, is spearheading this fateful development. The political heirs of the architects of Auschwitz are spearheading the cartel's next attempt at the control and ultimately the lives of millions of people. Merkel, Bayer and BASF, and Sarkozy, Hoist, today known as Sanofi, are the political stakeholders of the three cartel sisters ultimately responsible for two world wars. The exposure of the criminal past of these cartel companies is a timely event. The worldwide dissemination of the information in this book will enable mankind to learn important lessons from history and not fall prey to these cartel interests a third time. No one can say, "I did not know." His entire life, Holstein had remained a notorious servant of the cartel. Like a compulsive offender is driven from one crime scene to the next, so was Holstein, never resting in his conquest to complete his assignment to deliver Europe into the hands of the cartel. While Holstein, obviously, could not too openly reveal the corporate interests he was serving, he wrote strikingly candidly about his intentions when constructing the Brussels EU. In his 500-page book, The European Community, which by 1979 was already in its fifth edition, he even brags about the original nature of the centrepiece of his construct, the EU Commission, as being without any direct precedent in history. The constitutional organs, the Commission, quote, "every action starts with the EU Commission. The EU Commission is the most original element in the organisation of the European Community without any direct precedent in history. Its function is to represent the European Community to the inside and to the outside. The EU Commission is independent of the governments of the member states. Instructions of the member states must not be given to, nor taken by, the EU Commission. The Commission has the monopoly to initiate legislation." Walter Holstein, The European Community, 5th edition, Econ Verlag, Düsseldorf, 1979. It's obvious that few of the political leaders who signed the Lisbon Enabling Act actually read Holstein's book, and that even fewer have taken him seriously. Boldened by his complacency, the cartel moved ahead. Now, it is high time for democratic politicians and millions of people alike to stand up for the fundamental rights of freedom and democracy. If we do not act now, we may not get another chance to do so for generations. 7 decades after Holstein outlined his vision of Europe in his speech, it's close to becoming reality. Sarkozy, Merkel, Berlusconi and other politicians are ruthlessly carrying out the orders of the oil and drug cartel. It's no coincidence that these same politicians have been coercing other political leaders into signing the Enabling Act for the cartel's takeover of Europe and the so-called Lisbon Treaty. Since these politicians did not have the courage to resist the coercion of the cartel stakeholders, the people of Europe have to make a decision. Accept this corporate dictatorship over Europe, or protect our fundamental right to democracy for this generation of Europeans and all those yet to come. End of chapter 2.